Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Thursday, August 20th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. Ashland shares municipal salaries. Seven employees cleared $200,000 last year. By Caroline Bunnell. Ashland's highest paid municipal employees in 2025 were largely public safety officials, with 17 police department employees ranking among the town's top 25 earners, according to town payroll records obtained by the Daily News through a public records request. Although the list was dominated by public safety officials, Superintendent of Schools James Adams, $285,203, and Town Manager Michael Herbert, $285,526, were among the two top-paid municipal employees last year. Herbert recently announced he will step down September 1st after more than a decade of leading the town. Several other Ashland Public Schools employees also made the list, including Assistant Superintendent Michael Kara, 15th, $178,175, who was recently named Superintendent for the Littleton Public Schools, Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Operations Christopher Mathau, 19th, $170,288, and Ashland High School Principal Kelly St. Cor, 20th, $169,254. Overall, seven municipal employees earned more than $200,000 last year. Overtime and detail pay significantly boosted several town employees' total earnings. Police Officer Frank Urbani received $135,290 in detail pay in 2025, raising his total pay to $241,065 and making him the town's third highest paid employee. Police Officer Robert Arayu earned $83,955 in detail pay for a total of $214,355, fourth overall. Police Officer Brandon Barker earned $87,228 in detail pay for a total of $168,655, 21st. And Fire Captain Matthew Boland earned $59,384 in overtime pay, boosting his total compensation to $184,850, 13th. Ashland's highest paid employees, total pay. 1. Superintendent of Schools James Adams, $286,203. 2. Town Manager Michael Herbert, $285,526. 3. Police Officer Frank Urbani, $241,065. Police Officer Robert Araujo, $214,355. 5. Police Sergeant Lawrence Rodkey, $214,160. 6. Police Sergeant Brendan Ellis, $207,193. 7. Police Lieutenant Richard Briggs, $205,284. 8. Fire Lieutenant David Iarussi, $195,325. 9. Police Sergeant Kevin Pierce, $195,202. 10. Police Sergeant Jonathan Tessier, $187,090. 11. Police Officer Michael Snyder, $186,772. 12. Police Chief Kara Rossi, $185,251. 13. Fire Captain Matthew Boland, $184,850. 14. Fire Chief Keith Roby, $184,030. 15. Assistant Superintendent of Schools, Michael Kara, $178,175. 16. Police Officer Cameron Casella, $174,512. 17. Police Officer David Morey, $173,955. 18. Deputy Police Chief Michael Vinciula, $172,464. 19. Superintendent for Finance and Operations Christopher Mathau, $170,288. Number 20. Ashland High School Principal Kelly St. Cor, $169,254. 21. Police Officer Brandon Barker, $168,655. 22. Police Officer Melvin Ligon, $160,607. 23. Police Officer Michael Dion, $159,703. 24. Police Officer Paul Cavanaugh, $155,394. 25. Police Officer Rodolfo Ramirez, $152,318. Hopkinton's Among the Top-Ranked High Schools by Katie Landeck from USA Today Network, New England. When it comes to the best high schools in the country, Massachusetts is still at the top of the list, and Hopkinton High School is one of the top-ranked schools in the state. The annual U.S. News & World Report Best High Schools Ranking for 2026-27 found that Massachusetts leads the nation in education. Massachusetts continues to lead the nation with 47% of its high schools ranked in the top quarter of U.S. high schools and is followed by New Jersey with 44% and Maryland with 43%, the rankings found. This year's list evaluated about 27,000 public high schools, with 18,000 ranked. To make the determination, six metrics were considered, including results on state-required assessments, graduation rates, college readiness measures. Schools are evaluated on how effectively they serve all students, including underserved populations, with college readiness specifically measured through student participation and performance on Advanced Placement, AP, and International Baccalaureate exams, U.S. News & World Report said. What is the top high school in Massachusetts? The top-ranked high school in the state is Boston Latin School, which came in number 44 in the overall national rankings. It is an improvement for Boston Latin, which ranked number 46 in last year's ranking. Boston Latin School, which is also America's oldest school, has a 99% graduation rate, and 100% of the students took at least one AP test. For college readiness, it ranked number 60 in the country. Boston Latin has consistently ranked high in U.S. News & World Report's rankings. What were the top 10 high schools in Massachusetts? The top 10 schools in the Bay State were number 1, Boston Latin School, Boston, number 44 nationally. Number 2, Belmont High School, Belmont, number 138 nationally. Number 3, Pioneer Valley Chinese Immersion Charter School, Hadley, number 139 nationally. Number 4, the Bromfield School in Harvard, number 161 nationally. Number 5, Lexington High School, Lexington, number 167 nationally. Number 6, Mystic Valley Regional Charter School, Malden, number 169 nationally. 7, O'Brien School of Math and Science, Roxbury, number 206 nationally. 8, Hopkinton High School, Hopkinton, number 216 nationally. Number 9, Sturgis Charter Public School, Hyannis, number 252 nationally. Number 10, Dover-Sherburn Regional High School, Dover, number 262 nationally. Tennessee makes case against Meta. AG, Company Ignored Warnings on Teen Safety, by Evan Melans, from the Nashville Tennessean and the USA Today Network. 3 weeks into a trial over whether Instagram is addictive and harming teenagers, jurors have heard from 19 witnesses, including more than a dozen current or former employees of the parent company Meta, the inventor of Infinite Scroll, plus 2 state officials. The Tennessee Attorney General Office is looking to hold Meta liable for purportedly placing profits over the safety of young Instagram users. Attorneys gave opening statements in the case July 27th. The trial is expected to last until early September. If jurors find that Meta violated the Tennessee Consumer Protection Act by endangering teenagers on Instagram and not fairly presenting the risks of using the app, the company could be on the hook for millions of dollars. Chancellor Russell Perkins, who is overseeing the trial, would determine possible financial penalties if the jury rules against Meta. Meta is facing mounting legal pressure across the country. Since the Tennessee trial began, a New Mexico judge ordered the company to pay $567 million and make changes to its platforms after finding the company responsible for fueling a children's mental health crisis in the state. In an earlier phase of the same New Mexico case, a jury ordered Meta to pay $375 million. The company's biggest test yet began August 12th, when a jury selection kicked off in a trial pitting Meta against a coalition of state attorneys general, Colorado, Kentucky, California, and New Jersey. All allege Meta designed its platforms to keep young users hooked and misled consumers about their safety. The trial will also address claims by 29 states that Meta illegally collected and used children's data in violation of federal law. On July 31st, 4 families from Tennessee, Texas, Minnesota, and North Carolina filed a wrongful death and personal injury lawsuit against Meta and other social media companies, arguing deaths were caused by the harm experienced on these social media sites. The Tennessee lawsuit concerns the design of Instagram itself, including the use of features like infinite scroll, autoplay, disappearing content, and how notifications are sent. The AG's office says the company knew these features caused Instagram to be addictive to teenagers, yet knowingly ignored the risks they posed. Meta says teens are happy with their use of the platform and that Meta works hard to keep the platform safe. the company points to features that let young users and their parents limit how much time they spend on the app, and also gives parents greater oversight of their kids' accounts. The company's lawyers emphasized that the company has a find-it, fix-it approach, with issues on Instagram including problems with teen well-being. Only the Tennessee Attorney General's office has called witnesses so far. Meta will have the option to call witnesses of its own once the state rests its case. The Tennessean, part of the USA Today network, has observed the case in person and through Courtroom View Network, which is streaming the proceedings online. Here are some of the quotes that have come out of the trial so far. I believe that if you look at the company's actions, their words, the way they react to everything, that you cannot trust Mark Zuckerberg or Meta with young people because they haven't shown the levels of care that are necessary to entrust them to young people. Arturo Beja, former Meta employee, whistleblower and outspoken Meta critic. We have many teams working in teen well-being. We constantly try to identify problems for users, for parents, for teens, and then address those problems through the product innovation. Michael Rothschild, Meta Vice President of Product Management. Engagement and profit was seen as something directly contrasting with safety. Jason Satizan, Meta User Experience Researcher from 2018 to 2024, and whistleblower who testified before Congress. We were told in various instances what types of information we could put in reports, what types of words we could use, Satizan. We were just maniacally focused on growth and kind of near faith belief that all of these products were good for everybody. Brian Boland, Meta employee from 2009 to 2020, who resigned and testified against his former employer before Congress. Do you think that kids would be addicted to a feed that only of science videos? Meta attorney Alex Parkinson, cross-examining former Meta employee Annika Buffon. She said she did not study that issue. Teens, really more than any other demographic group, is clearly something that they are focused on and is important to their revenue generation model. Not in the near term. Teens don't make that much money for them today. But in the long term, Dan Lystra-Jones, outside economist, who conducted analysis of Meta's business model. Anybody ever stood outside a high school at dismissal time? And back in the day when we were growing up, all the kids were talking to each other. You stand outside a high school right now, and every single kid is standing there, sucked into their phone. That makes me want to cry when I see that. Melissa Hunt, licensed clinical psychologist and researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, who did the first experimental study on Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram use. I, Richard Kennedy, personally view social media as a tool. Any tool could have good aspects or bad aspects, but I don't know that I know enough to be able to make a blanket statement that I think social media is good for children's mental health. Richard Kennedy, Executive Director of the Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth since 2018. I no longer felt like Meta was or could be a force for good in the world, and I no longer felt like my work could change that from the inside. Natalie Rose Troxell, User Experience Researcher at Meta, from 2017 to 2022, on her decision to leave the company. Alligator Alcatraz suit, says Florida withheld records, by Mackenzie Hannon, Fort Myers News Press and Naples Daily News and USA Today Network, Florida. Weeks after Alligator Alcatraz closed its doors, environmental groups have updated a lawsuit with new allegations that state and federal officials withheld records that helped keep the Everglades Detention Center open for nearly a year. In June 2025, Friends of the Everglades filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security for failing to follow the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires an environmental impact review before construction starts on major federal projects. In the amended lawsuit filed August 12th in federal court in Miami, the groups argue officials did not disclose records showing Florida applied for federal funding for the facility. According to the filing, judges later ruled without that information and incorrectly concluded that the state had not sought federal assistance for the project. Florida hastily set up the immigrant detention camp at a former jet port in the Everglades after Florida Attorney General James Uffmeyer conceived the plan in the summer of 2025. It was estimated to have cost more than $1 billion in taxpayer funds. On August 21, 2025, U.S. District Court Judge Kathleen Williams found that the project was a joint state-federal venture and ordered the facility to be dismantled within 60 days. A September 4, 2025 ruling by the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals followed and is in the focus of recently amended lawsuit. In the September 2025 ruling, a split appellate panel stopped an order that would have forced the site to be dismantled. The judges concluded it was an undisputed that Florida had not applied for federal funding, meaning the project did not have to go through federal environmental review. Attorneys for Friends of the Everglades and the Center for Biological Diversity now argue that assumption was incorrect. According to documents obtained through a public records lawsuit, the Florida Division of Emergency Management prepared an initial federal funding application on June 24, 2025. The application reached the Federal Emergency Management Agency no later than July 4, 2025. Roughly 2 months before the appeals court issued its ruling. The Court of Appeals said more than once that the Florida Department of Emergency Management had not applied for federal funding, said Paul J. Schweip of Coffey Burlington, an attorney for Friends of the Everglades and the Center for Biological Diversity. We know now that this was wrong. The environmental groups say those funding records were never shared with the appellate court and that judges made their decision without information they believe would have changed the outcome. The group behind the lawsuit argued that once Florida applied for federal funding, those reviews should have taken place before the detention center was built and began operating. The amended complaint also introduces claims under the Endangered Species Act, arguing that the facility construction and operation harmed protected wildlife within and around Big Cypress National Preserve. News in brief. Popular Florida resort under contract to sell for $1.38 billion. Ryman Hospitality Properties has a definitive agreement to purchase Grande Lakes Orlando Resort in Florida from Trinity Investments for $1.38 billion. The 409-acre complex includes a JW Marriott, a Ritz-Carlton, and a Greg Norman-designed golf course. Grande Lakes is a terrific asset and one that fits all of our ownership criteria, said Mark Fioravanti, President and Chief Executive Officer of Ryman Hospitality Property. Trinity bought the resort in December 2018 for $870 million. Plans call for the property to continue being operated by Marriott International under the JW Marriott and Ritz-Carlton brands. Kalshi files with CFTC to launch stock index perpetuals. Prediction market startup Kalshi filed with the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission on August 18th to launch equity index perpetuals, a type of futures contract that would let traders take leveraged long or short positions on stock market benchmarks without owning the underlying shares. The move is part of Kalshi's broader strategy to compete with traditional exchange operators by expanding beyond event contracts into multiple asset classes through perpetual futures. Kalshi's filing for equity index perpetual futures would put the prediction market operator in more direct competition with traditional derivatives exchanges by offering a product that tracks major U.S. stock indexes without a fixed expiration date. Perpetual futures, or PERPs, are derivatives that lack a traditional expiration date, allowing traders to hold positions indefinitely without rolling over contracts. Diageo sheds nearly 2,000 jobs as Drastic Dave leads overhaul. Diageo's total headcount fell more than 6% year on year by the end of June, its annual report showed, as the world's top spirits maker embarks on restructuring under new CEO Dave Lewis. The company reported an average of 27,938 employees on a full-time equivalent basis, including staff of associates and joint ventures at the end of fiscal year 2026, down from 29,860 in the previous year. Most of the reductions are across its regional markets, are expected to be completed by September 1st, implying that the final number of impacted staff could be higher. Diego declined to comment on job cuts. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a safe and well day.